The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
All right, we are into the new year. It is 2025, and that means that there is a thirst among some people to get a registration plate that says 251. If you are one of those, or even if you are considering replacing your car, or if you are considering buying, hiring, anything, Ger is the expert. Ger Herbert, who is motoring editor and columnist with the Sunday Independent, 53106 or 087 1400 106. First things first, Ger, is that trend of people wanting to get the New Year reg on their car, is that still a thing, or did the 251-252 split kill it?
No, what the 251-252 split did was it kind of, I suppose, it separated. It there used to be a fact where 70% of new cars were bought in the first 3 months of the year. And this was one of the reasons why the industry was calling for this split registration, because they needed extra staff. They'd have all the staff. They'd be really busy for 3 months and then literally nobody would walk in the door for the next 9 months. So it has definitely smoothed out demand. So we do get a lot of demand in July for the second registration, but you still get people who want that 2.5 for the whole year. So you still get a lot of sales in the first, you know, quarter.
And how are we doing on pricing and availability? Because it doesn't feel that long ago that you were talking about chip shortages and how difficult it was to get cars and all of the rest of it. Is that all now behind us? Can you get what you want fairly quick?
Yeah, more or less that is behind us. And it's interesting what that did to prices as well, because at the time, because it was hard to get stuff, prices were very high. EVs in particular were high because there was waiting lists. So if you could grab one, you did at whatever price. Now with all of that adjusted, EV prices, that's what's impacted the secondhand market. And we hear a lot about the resale values. That's what would. So we see a lot of throwbacks still to that chip shortage, but not in the way that it was, in a different way now.
Well, I'll talk to you about EV secondhand prices in a while. First, congratulations, first of all, to Mary from Walkinstown, who texted to say, "Hi, Geraldine, I want to buy my first car." That's not bad to be in your 60s and buying your first car. I need to travel to Sligo in it periodically. What would you recommend?
Well, I mean, it all depends on budget and if you have special requirements. I presume at 60, but she might need a big boot for golf clubs or something like that. So it really depends on your lifestyle. I would look, though, at a small hatchback. I mean, if you're buying a car, you can't go far wrong. There are, I mean, SUVs are very popular, but there's nothing to beat a good old Fiesta, a Volkswagen Polo, an Opel Corsa. They're still producing them. They're getting better with every iteration. They have got more expensive, but I mean, they're well worth it.
Well, ironically, you may have just made a sale for our next texter, because the text directly under that says, what would you recommend to change to from a Volkswagen Polo?
Well, again, if you want to upgrade, you want to get something a bit bigger, look at a Golf and the Ford Focus and the Astra and all of those. Or if you want to just move across, it's hard to beat the Volkswagen Polo. It's not the most exciting. The Fiesta would be a better drive, but the Polo is probably one of the best all-round hatchbacks.
Have they stopped selling the Up? I really liked the Up.
I know, and I wouldn't mind, but I had the Volkswagen, the electric Up, which is a super little car. Absolutely. Now, when you get into it, it feels like a 2014 car because they didn't do a whole lot with the inside of it. But they have
great little thing, though.
Yeah. I think they're still knocking around. Whether you can buy them new, I'm not sure.
Now, this goes to what you were saying about the EV secondhand prices. Text to say, I'd love to replace my 17-year-old petrol car with an electric one. However, I've no garage and the on-street parking is on the other side of the road. Mm. My question is, when can we expect the infrastructure for drivers like myself to be able to charge an EV overnight in the street? Thank you.
Okay, I would say it's not an infrastructure problem. I would say it's a cost problem at the moment. I tend to always advise people, if they're going to buy an EV, only buy one if you have a driveway. That's for two reasons. Because with a home charger, you not only have the convenience of charging when you want, but it's the cost factor. The biggest problem, now there's loads of, there are grants out there for apartment owners and there is more on-street charging and local authorities are supposed to put this in. But the problem is you're paying a premium because it is public charging. And I think there has to be some way that they can come up with the fact that everybody who has a home has an ESB or an electricity account. Could we not somehow charge and connect it to that and therefore avail of the same low rates? Nobody seems to have come up with that, but we have to stop penalising people who do not have a driveway if we want EVs.
Now, this goes to the thing of the EV purchasing, because there is reluctance. We're still not seeing the kind of uptake that we wanted. You can explain all this to me. That's a 17-year-old petrol car. If you look at the lifespan for EV batteries, if they replace their car with an EV, they're highly unlikely to get it to 17 without needing a battery replacement, aren't they?
Actually, the latest indications would be that they will actually do that. Now, again, these are forward projections based on what we know at the moment. But there's a lot of studies that have been conducted mainly in the States and in Europe, in countries like Norway, where they have them for longer. But they're looking at now, obviously, batteries don't degrade linearly. It's a different thing. You know, it's over time or whatever. But what they're looking at is kind of a 2 to 2.5% degradation, right? What the experts are saying now is that you'd be looking at getting 300 to 400,000 kilometres realistically out of new batteries in terms of the management systems that they have. That's projections. We can't stand over that for definite, but that's what it looks like
but
at the moment.
But JD Power is saying about 15 years for an EV battery. That's what they say currently. That means that if you get to 15 years, effectively your car, unless you bought an extremely expensive car, it has no value left.
Okay. First of all, as I said, it can be 15 to 20. We don't know yet. It looks like they're lasting an awful lot longer and they might even outlast the car. That's what the estimates say at the moment. The other thing is how many people actually drive a car for that long? You see, if you look at what people need, no, the average age of an Irish car
is about 11, isn't it?
Is 9 years. The average a life expectancy of a car across Europe is about 18 years, as in that's when they literally die. But the actual usage of them is about 9 years in Ireland. That's your average.
Hang on, Ismail is saying 11 years average for petrol, 10 years. No, this is average age, not terminal age.
9 years.
Well, the current on the website for Ismail this morning, it was saying 11
and 10. It's gone up then because it was 9 years. So that's,
but if that's average age and if your battery replacement is average 15, that's an interesting Venn diagram overlap if you're going to have to spend 6K to replace your battery.
The thing is, if you're buying now, the chances are they're going to last longer than that. We're still only looking at past experience. They're getting better all the time. So going future, they should be lasting much longer.
Another one saying, we are unlucky and bought an EV on PCP in 2022 and it's lost all of its value. Is it best just to hand back the keys? Now, remind me of how PCPs work. Is this where you do the lump sum and a balloon payment at the end?
Yeah, that shouldn't be an issue. Okay, so basically when you're buying a PCP, you walk in, so say you're looking at a car that's worth 30 grand, right? They will say to you, put down a deposit. The minimum you can put down is 10%. The max is 30. Most people put down about 20%. So in that case, it'd be 6 grand, right? They might say to you, that car is going to be worth in 3 years' time, 15,000, right? So therefore, take away the 6,000 that you paid at the start, the 15,000 that it's going to be worth at the end. So that's 21,000. So you're now left with 9,000. You're going to pay off that 9,000 plus interest over the next 3 years. So essentially what you're paying on a PCP is the depreciation.
This is why I never fully understand PCPs. Yes.
So you come back at the end of that, right? And they say to you, guess what? Your car is only worth 10,000. That makes no odds to you. That's the dealer's problem. But if you come back and they say to you, guess what? That car is now worth 16,000. You get that extra 1,000 and you can carry it on. So actually what happens at the end doesn't matter. But what does matter is the depreciation. You're paying off the depreciation. So if you buy at a time when depreciation is high, PCPs are going to cost you money.
So what do you recommend? Sorry, for this person now, the answer
shouldn't is... make a difference. The fixed value is the fixed value. It will make a difference if you want to buy it, but PCPs are not for buying a car. PCPs are for having the use of a car over 3 years. If you want to buy a car and run it into the ground, get a credit union loan or get a bank loan.
Oh, so what he's saying in this, where he says at the end, is it best to just hand back the keys?
Hand back the keys.
When the PCP ends, there you go. Yeah. Good luck.
The dealer will worry about the value.
What's your recommendation in terms of methods to buy a car? Is it the credit union loan? Is it PCP? What do you advise?
Again, it depends what you want from a car. If you're one of these people who like, you know, you have a family, whatever, you like the idea of buying, of having a new car every 3 years, having the reliability of knowing that I don't have to get it NCT'd, I don't have to worry about the servicing costs, the whole lot, because it's cheap to do because it's a new car. Then PCP is great because all you're doing is you're paying for the use of a car over 3 years and you're going back, letting the dealer worry about that and going into a new one. If you want a car outside your door and you want to have it for the next 5 to 10 years, then you need to own it. And to do that, unless you have the cash window, you know, from News Talk, this weekend
grand,
or whatever, and then you can buy a few cars, you have a car for every occasion, the chances are you're going to be borrowing. So look at the credit union or look at, you know, a bank loan or whatever.
And very briefly, if there is a car model currently that is calling to you, what is it? Is there one for 2025 where you go, oh, I really like X?
I'm going to say an EV simply because it was the most impressive car I had in the last while. The Kia EV3, really, really nice car. Kia, to me, have the best brand of EVs at the moment. The EV6, the EV9 and the EV3 is particularly good. But the EV3 is really impressive.
And they're pure EV, not hybrid.
Pure EV. And they're like mid-30s or late-30s price-wise. So that's basically what families are expecting to buy.
Ger, thank you so much. That is Geraldine Herbert, who is motoring editor and columnist with the Sunday Independent.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.